Hello and welcome to Horrorsperia. My name is May.
And my name is Clinton, aka Scaredy Clint.
And welcome to our episode today. We're talking about the monstrous feminine, which is a theory that was created by Barbara Creed in 1993, who is a very famous media theorist. She currently teaches at the University of Melbourne. So pretty cool.
Yeah. So what does she teach? Horror film stuff?
Usually a lot of, horror theory stuff. But, I mean, we're not part of the university, so I don't know exactly what she's teaching over there. But she does work in media theory.
Okay, cool. Yeah. And she created this idea or this criticism construct of the monstrous feminine?
Exactly. And so the monstrous feminine is a theory that focuses on female monsters, to kind of put it really bluntly. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more than that, and even kind of a reversal of the kind of misogynistic take on it. Mm-hmm. And it is a reversal of male monsters kind of stuff. But yeah, so that's what we're going to be looking at today. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm trying to think if there's any updates. I watched an episode of Los Espookies.
Yeah, how are you liking that?
It was okay. I'm gonna keep watching.
That's cool.
It sounds like it's gonna be horror in the horror genre somewhere. I think it's a little bit more adjacent, as you would say, if not adjacent. But it's in Spanish English, and yeah, it's got the HBO backing, and it's funny. So yeah, I'm gonna keep watching.
Do you usually like Fred Armisen stuff?
Hot and cold. Yeah.
Do you watch Portlandia?
I've seen a good amount. I've seen enough where I'm like, okay, I got it. Yeah. Do you? Do you like Fred Armisen?
I've actually never have seen even an episode.
What?
Of Portlandia.
Have you seen a skit from it?
No, not even.
Oh,
that.
My God.
It's just one of those things where it's such like a hipster thing. And I'm not even, I'm pretty self-aware that I know that many people might look at me as a hipster.
Yeah.
But it's also just like, it's so coded in that DNA that,
okay,
it's never been anything that I've ever felt compelled to look into.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I want to watch it because of the way that it relates to usually what we talk about.
Yeah.
But I remember Elizabeth Moss used to be married to him.
Elizabeth Moss. Who's that again?
Handmaid's Tale. And Mad Men.
Okay.
And she said that the best impression that Fred Armisen does is of a normal person. And I've never been able to get that out of my mind. Granted, uh-huh, she's like a Scientologist.
Oh, okay.
I do think that it's, I don't know. Yeah. So I definitely want to watch it though, because I hear that it does like a satire on Primer Impacto.
Uh-huh.
Which is, I think, is really funny. Like,
yes, which is the Spanish news
show.
It's on Univision, I think, here in the United
Univision.
Yeah.
So that's cool. No, we definitely should. And Midsommar is coming out soon.
Midsommar, which takes place in what, like
Sweden?
Okay. Yeah, I've got a Swedish roommate. I wonder if he can give me some Swedish details.
Yeah, because actually, it's actually like a real festival they do in the middle of the summer. Yeah, like their marketing campaign did a mock-up in New York of the festival.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, it just looked like a bunch of pastel hipsters.
Right, it
out.
Sounds like Coachella.
It literally would have looked like,
you know, with different music. One quick note on my Swedish roommate today. Right before I left the house, he is a big man, and he was shirtless walking around outside. I must have just worked out or something. And man, he is buff.
Yeah.
I
figured he seems very muscular every single time.
He was glistening. I had to run out of the house because I felt awkward even just like being there. When he came back, I was like, I gotta get out of here. This man is it's like coming down from Mount Olympus or something.
Oh no, that is too much. So yeah, interesting. It's the height of the summer. Summer just passed, the summer solstice.
Summer solstice just passed. Yeah.
Yeah, summer. So we're right in the thick of summer.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of random stuff going on. 4th of July soon, right?
Yes. How are you doing? Because I know it's been a rough couple weeks, but the listeners have been, you know, with us, and they've been listening to us, so I'm sure they would like, you know, to know how you're doing and get a little update from you.
Nothing to update about.
Yeah.
So
still hard.
Yeah, everything sucks, but yeah. We're here to podcast. Yes. So let's get into it.
Okay.
So the monstrous feminine, Barbara Creed, it's a horror theory that's essentially very gendered. So the scholarship is varying of it. But Barbara Creed, she noticed that there were these ways in which we talk about female monsters. Mm-hmm. That was very specific. And so she broke it up into 7 different categories. She broke it up into the archaic mother.
Okay.
The monstrous womb.
Now, are these all different movies? Or can some movies have multiple of these?
It depends. I think it's actually kind of rare sometimes that movies, like a symbol of the monstrous feminine, embodies more than one of these archetypes.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of them are very closely interrelated. It's not impossible.
Okay.
And we can kind of discuss what films, because each of these 7 things are representative of film. When she was creating the 7 archetypes, she was referencing specific films, and we can talk about those.
Okay, sorry. Can I back you up? Let's go. Can we go back to 1?
Sure.
1 is?
The archaic mother.
Archaic mother.
Number 2 is the monstrous womb.
Monstrous womb.
The number 3 is vampires. Number 4 are possessed monsters.
Can I pause 1 second?
Sure.
So vampires possess monsters.
Yeah.
So okay.
Number 5 are witches.
Witches.
Number 6, the castrating mother.
Mm,
and the number 7 is the femme castratrice.
I'm going to need some help with that one.
Femme castratrice.
What?
It's a French word.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's it mean?
The woman that castrates, basically. Femme is woman, and castratrice is kind of like castrating. Mm-hmm. Castrating mother signifies something different. Femme castratrice is more singular.
Okay.
Kind of.
Interesting.
Yeah. So thinking of those 7 archetypes, the archaic mother, monstrous womb, vampire, possessed monster, witch, castrating mother, femme castratrice. Can you think of any examples of what those make you think of?
Well, one of the movies I watched for this podcast. Yeah.
Which one?
The Brood.
Well, The Brood is one of the main, because this is a book.
Uh-huh.
As a book.
That she published a book?
In 1993. It started as a book, but now it's literally its own school of thought.
Uh-huh.
And in the book, when she wrote about the monstrous womb, she wrote it exclusively through the brood.
The brood, yeah.
Yeah. So that's
a pretty clear,
straightforward
example.
Exactly. Yeah. And the rest, vampires, witches, the witch in and of itself.
Uh-huh. What's a vampire? So I guess is it really any vampire movie with a woman vampire in it?
Lesbian vampire genre right there, right?
Okay.
Yeah. Daughters of Darkness. That would be an example for vampires, possessed monsters.
Possessed monsters. Can you give me an example?
The Exorcist.
The Exorcist. Okay.
Yeah, The Exorcist on that one. And yeah, so and the films that we've seen today, actually, I think the one that's probably the most hybrid is probably Raw, because Raw in and of itself is a very interesting film to discuss. And mm-hmm. we'll get to that one last. But in general, that's the main things that we need to know to understand the monstrous feminine. In general, it is the fact that the monster is gendered, and usually the connotation is very negative. Usually the connotation isn't of empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
It usually does have the patriarchal kind of, and I think we see that a lot, especially in Under the Skin. It has that kind of patriarchal overtone. And we especially see it in The Brood.
Mm-hmm.
The Brood is a really good example.
David Cronenberg.
Yeah. So we'll get to that one. And it's closely tied to media theory, but it's also closely tied to psychoanalysis. Like, she references Freud and Kristeva a lot in her...
Freud and Kristeva.
Yeah. And
I know Freud, but who's Kristeva?
It's another psychoanalysis.
Okay.
And especially, like, some tenets of the monstrous feminine is, like, menstrual blood is abject.
Abject, so, meaning?
abject, like it's the dirtiest thing.
Gotcha.
Like
an abject horror.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, that's exactly what it's supposed to be for. So it's essentially the monstrous feminine is really codifying these different aspects of the female monster as poison and the bad. And I think it's a really great, it's one of the tenets of feminist film theory. And I think it's also just fascinating to look at the monstrous feminine through these varying films. And we actually have a lot more films that do it than we may even think about.
Mm-hmm.
And to see the difference between that and non-gendered or gendered male monsters, I think there really is a power in difference. Like, for example, in setting up her theory, she said in Nosferatu and in Phantom of the Opera, the protagonists, the women in those films, are bent towards sympathizing towards the monster because there's such a power in difference. Those two archetypes are so different from the patriarchal male archetypes in those films.
You mean power difference? Like the woman has little power and the male monster has a lot of power?
No. The monster and the woman have, but they both don't have power.
Nobody has power.
Exactly. Okay. They're othered. And okay. So that, because that's true in Nosferatu, Lucy and Nosferatu kind of have a bond. In Phantom of the Opera, Christine and the Phantom have a bond, and because there's a power in difference, they're not respected as much as the outside world.
Okay.
And so and that's kind of where the thread of the monstrous feminine starts. It's how do these abject images of women influence the discussion around it, and what does it really mean? Yeah.
Cool.
So that's
a lot to break down, a lot to like parse through. You go through all of horror cinema and look at it with that lens.
And you really, like I said, this was made in the 90s, but it really does go back and apply really strongly. And it just shows you the differences in authorship. And all of the films that we're seeing today were directed by men except one, and that would be Raw. And I think the difference in that also helps open up a lot. So it's kind of a lot to talk about. It's a bit of the male gaze, the female gaze,
mm-hmm.
the power differences in gender. What does it mean? You know, what would have meant if it was something else?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I've got a question. So there's 8 archetypes. Is that right?
7.
7. And she wrote that in the 90s?
Yeah.
Do you think that, or has she developed any other archetypes, or do you think there's any that are missing?
She hasn't. No. I looked into that recently. It's funny. She actually did a breakdown of Raw the other day. This is, I think, a year ago.
Okay. Maybe 2 years ago. Technically a different day.
Yeah. And she said something very interesting about it that I think we'll talk about when we get to Raw.
Uh-huh.
But she does have a lot of hindsight with the creation of the theory, and sometimes she thinks that this theory is solely applicable to horror films. A lot of times when films are more hybrid, she thinks that the focus changes, and I kind of see what she means, because horror films do have very specific focuses, but if you're making kind of a film like The Wild Boys or something like that, The Wild Boys would be actually an interesting one to break down, because they're not women, but they are women, you know, and what is the abject there?
Yeah.
But they don't really codify that as a horror film, even though it has strong horror tropes.
Mm-hmm.
So is the difference the fact that it's not a horror film or not?
Mm.
That's how she was approaching Raw, because they were having difficulty kind of describing Raw.
Yeah. Like, and as a category, does it belong in horror? That kind of thing.
More like breaking down how does the monstrous feminine look like in Raw. Okay. And especially the monstrous feminine, for the most part, usually they're the antagonists. And how does that look like? Like, who are we rooting for? I think 2 of the films that we saw today are really vague with that.
Uh-huh.
I do think
about who the antagonist is.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think we can go ahead and explicate that.
Explicate.
As we... Yeah, go through. Cool. An important question to remember is, you know, how are the victims codified through their body? You know, and because this is it, all of these films are very relational to anatomy more than, and I mean, horror in and of itself is kind of a study of an, of anatomy when you, in a kind of crude one when you think of it that way. But in monstrous feminine films, the body is extraordinarily important. And I think that's something that is nailed down in every single one of these films.
Gotcha. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So we can do a 60-second countdown by having a little bit of fun.
Okay.
We can do as many monstrous feminine films as we can think of.
Okay.
Yeah. How do you feel about that?
I'm going to be terrible, but
okay,
maybe. So you just keep going. And if I ever think of something,
no, we'll do, we'll ping pong.
Oh, God. This is going to be the world's slowest game of ping pong.
Okay. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. Let's go. Okay. I'll start with Alien.
Oh, I was literally going to do that one. So the ball is in my side of the table. And
Archaic
I'm going to pong it back to you.
Monstrous Womb.
With the movie, a vampire movie, the one we saw, the one with the ladies. And they're sucking and killing in 60s style French.
70s. Daughters of Darkness.
You even said it earlier. Daughters of Darkness.
Yes. That.
Back in your court.
Basic Instinct.
Oh, that was a good one. The one, Ma.
Yes.
So we just talked about that a couple of episodes
sure.
ago.
Sure. I Spit on Your Grave.
The Chucky movie, Bride of Chucky.
Sure, yeah. Psycho.
Annabelle. Annabelle Returns. Annabelle Homecoming.
Kind of, yeah. Cat People.
Oh, I've never heard that. That sounds cool.
Okay, time's up.
Okay.
All right. But you kind of, so some more to mention. Alien, The Hunger, Dressed to Kill, The Exorcist, Psycho, Basic
Psycho.
Instinct, A Reflection of Fear, Cat People, Life Force, I Spit on Your Grave, Teeth. Hereditary. Yeah, so those are just a couple off the top of it. And then the three that we're talking about today, The Brood, Under the Skin, and Raw. We cut one, and
the witch.
The one that we cut, the yeah, The Witch is one. We cut one, and the one that we cut is actually probably my favorite, and that's Possession. Possession
oh, right.
is probably one of the best examples of the monstrous feminine.
Is that a movie?
So crazy.
A movie named Possession?
Yes.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yes. And yeah, okay. So I think that's a nice little overview.
We know
of what we're talking
we got the
about.
General. Yeah. Now yeah. let's dig into some films.
Okay. All right. So we're going to start with The Brood, which is 1979, David Cronenberg.
They come from the unknown, and they're here now, hiding, waiting to strike. You can feel their presence all around you. Never before have you come this close to the edge of terror. Never before have you faced anything so strange and sinister, so bizarre and unnerving. Never until now. David Cronenberg's The Brood.
Are you ready for me, Frank? I seem to be a very special person now. I'm in the middle of a strange adventure.
I want to go with you wherever you go.
Do you?
Yes.
Then look!
The Brood. You can run. You can hide and hope they won't find you. But you won't escape. Once unleashed, the Brood will destroy anyone who gets in their way. David Cronenberg's ultimate experience in inner terror, starring Oliver Reed and Samantha Eggar. The Brood. They're waiting for you.
And so that was a bit of The Brood, which is directed by David Cronenberg, who's a Canadian. So this is actually a Canadian film. We're still foreign. Actually, everything that we're seeing today is foreign. And so it was made in 1979. And David Cronenberg, one of the greats of horror film, he is especially known for doing body horror, like The Fly and Videodrome, two very popular films that he made after this.
Yeah.
He considers this his the most classic horror that he's ever done. So that's interesting to think about.
And you were saying, we were talking, just the two of us, and you were saying this is one of the earlier movies?
Yeah, it is one of his earlier films. It's not his first film, though.
Okay.
He was already making, I think this might be his fourth or fifth.
Okay. But,
yeah, I mean, it is one that kind of had a lukewarm reception, and a lot of people thought that it was very extreme.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of had, it's one of those underrated classics.
Yeah, does it have a bigger following now?
Yes, it does.
All right.
Yes, it does, yeah.
Is it for the campiness of it, or is it for some other reason?
I don't know. I guess you would have to ask those people, right?
Yeah.
I think Cronenberg is just such an iconic director. And I do think this is one of his most personal films, because
really?
He wrote it as a reaction to his divorce proceedings.
Oh.
And I think that is so nauseatingly obvious throughout most of the film. I like this film, but I think it has a lot of harmful messages to it, and I think a lot of the harmful messaging is because it was written by a man that was in the midst of a very nasty custody battle at that.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, you can relate it almost directly.
That to really changes the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it especially because, well, I guess that's the way of getting into it. So what did you think about it in general?
Well, I haven't had enough time with it to have any deeper thoughts, rather than it wasn't boring.
It's definitely not boring.
Roger Ebert thought it was boring. Roger Ebert walloped this movie so hard that even 30 years later, when you Google The Brood, his review is like one of the first results, and it just devastates this movie. But Roger Ebert thought it was boring. I didn't think it was boring.
I don't think it's boring.
I thought it was really well acted. I thought it was campy, which I like.
It is very campy.
I didn't know what was going to happen, really. And
neither did I.
Roger Ebert thought he knew what was going to happen, but rest in peace, Roger Ebert. Really, probably.
I do like Roger Ebert.
I know. I say this out of love, but he claims he knew what was going to happen, so okay. But I didn't know what was going to happen. And then the big reveal at the end was I thought was so funny and shocking and silly and campy and shocking. And honestly, up until the very end, I didn't even think the monstrous feminine was going to come around. I actually wondered if you accidentally gave this movie to me, because we had talked about doing an episode on Canadian films. And I thought, oh, wow, did May forget? But no, the monstrous feminine comes in strong at the end.
I do agree that it does take a bit to build up to it, and I think, though, as you said, there it has that build exists, and you're not really sure where it's coming from until it's just right there. And I think and now we can talk about the meanings of it, but I think it's also a bit unique, you know. Even to this day, I still think that The Brood is something that hasn't really been replicated.
Yeah.
And I do think that, speaking strictly as a horror film, it's actually still very effective and still very scary. And
yeah,
I think it's a good piece of work.
Can we give a review of the plot?
Sure. So it's about a man whose wife is with this therapist, but some weird things are happening. And
the therapist looks like an evil William Shatner. He's really good.
Yeah, it's played by Oliver Reed. And yeah, so it's
and the therapist is like switching in and out of people. So the therapist pretends to be the wife's father, and then it's this other person and this other person. So there's all the a lot of therapy scenes in there.
A lot of therapy scenes, and we're not really too sure what's happened. So basically what starts to happen is people start to die and we're not really sure why. And it comes to find out that there's this group of evil children that barely look like children. Now you remember that I think one time I was referencing, I forgot what film now, but the little creatures just look so weird.
And they all, I love a good monster design that's like uniform. So these little kids were dressed in these little like jackets, like little kids jackets with the hoods up.
Yeah.
And they kind of skittered around like.
Yeah.
And
I wonder if those were really children.
I think that's a good question. I'm going to say.
It's funny. I actually wasn't able to find out
how many actual children were killed in the filming of this right. movie.
Right. No, because they were all just kind of like really, they really just like don't hold back on the evil.
Yeah.
Yeah. But okay, let's now talk about the Monstrous Feminine. So obviously Monstrous Womb.
Uh-huh. Can we give away the ending?
I mean, yes.
It's old enough.
You're always the one that doesn't want
to
spoil.
I'm the one that tries to protect you from the ending. But this one, I think we got to give it away to even talk about.
Yeah. So it kind of all culminates towards an ending where her husband finally goes to where she's stationed. And he's like, where are all of these evil children? Where are they coming from? And she's like, well, she goes into a long speech about how she's not loved and whatnot. And then during her like villain speech,
he tries to fake her out and be like, I want to get back with you.
I love you, because the doctor is explaining, and this is very important to understanding the monstrous feminine aspect of this film. The doctor is explaining that she has to believe that you're on her good side, or else the brood, aka these children, are going to keep attacking. Because that's essentially what we come to find out, that the brood is essentially all coming from his wife.
And the brood actually kidnapped her
own kid.
So there's that custody battle happening
there. It's very literal. Yeah, this film is almost very, once you understand what it's about, you're like, oh, this is like, I see exactly what you mean. I mean, even the way that the monster is extinguished, you can even say, oh, okay, he just killed his
How did wife. He kill her? I forget.
With
his logic, his male logic.
I think they just literally stab the womb.
Stab the womb.
So what we were going to...
I kind of forget. It's funny that I don't even... I just saw it 2 days ago.
What we were going to say is that when she's going through her speech, this is probably the craziest reveal ever. She's wearing like a bathrobe and she takes off the bathrobe and her complete lower half is this just sack of pulsating
like a
fetuses.
Yeah, like an external
pouch that's connected to her body. It's actually kind of crazy to describe, because even when you watch it, you're like, wow, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that before.
Yeah. And it was definitely a dun 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 moment.
He chokes her to death.
Oh, he chokes her to death.
Yeah. And she dies. And when she dies, the womb dies.
Well, so she lives forever in my heart and imagination, which is why I think I blocked that out.
Yeah, no. And then as a consequence, all of the children die, because she was the life force. So she was the monstrous womb. She was the... So as a result, you know, there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
Right? There's the fact that the children do her bidding. It's the fact that she is the one that seems so unstable and out of control because of all of these external forces. There is the fact that this abjection is coming from one of the most sacred feminine practices, aka
which is giving birth
and motherhood,
which for a guy could easily be like, ew, you know.
No, and it's kind of, it's codified as completely disgusting. They're codified as they don't look cute or anything. They're just codified as complete horrific.
And she even like, which you see her give birth to one in this external way. I think she even like eats the
She licks it.
Oh my god! And which is just so over the top. Oh, was it?
It was. Yes, they thought that
they
was
couldn't
too
handle
extreme.
It.
Yeah,
sure.
I actually was going to ask if you saw the censored
lick
version.
Version.
Yeah,
I proudly watched the lick version.
The lick version That was the Samantha Eggers actress. That was the actress's
choice. Yeah. Great. Good like, suggestion.
If she's this connected, she would lick it.
Yeah. Like an animalistic kind of mother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like when you look on the surface, I think it is definitely like badass. You're like, oh, wow, what a queen, you know? Yeah. But yes. when you really start to break it down, you're like, wow, David Cronenberg really hated his ex-wife.
Yeah. Yeah. You could have easily named this movie like Divorce Issues or Why, you know, Crazy Lady. I don't know. It just is so. I almost think he may have gotten a pass on this or something because this is like hugely problematic.
It's very problematic. And I think that's what The Monstrous Feminine kind of calls out in a way.
Uh-huh.
I think Barbara Creed really. I think Barbara Creed doesn't come from like a. Problematic, canceled, obviously that's very like 21st
framework. Yeah,
but I do think it's a way of looking at films mostly directed by men and seeing the way that they codify female reproduction systems, female curation, mm-hmm. female emotions, and how they codify those and monsters that we usually come to fear. And I think that's, I don't think there's any layer of sympathy. And I think out of the.
For the brood mother?
For Nola, the brood mother. I don't think it's the case for the other two films, actually. I don't think David Cronenberg wanted us to have sympathy for Nola. I don't think that, I think that this film is a direct attack on exactly what he said. I mean, he himself says it's the most personal film. A direct
attack on.
On his experience.
On my ex-wife.
On his ex-wife, yeah. And the whole custody battle of it.
I think if I had seen this at the time, I would have thought, this movie's bullshit. Like, just the ending, silly, crazy. I like it more as a oddity, as a campy, old, funky movie, one of a kind.
Which it does work. That's what I'm saying. On a superficial level, it does really work that way.
Yeah. What do you think about, there's a character, there's some weird gender stuff in this.
There's a lot of weird gender stuff.
Yeah, so there's a lot of therapy stuff, and which is all really well acted, and well written. There's a character who is, at the beginning of the movie, he's like beaten down because he's more feminine, and the therapist is pretending to be his father, and he's saying all these like really toxic masculine things, and that character kind of continues through the movie in different ways, but like, why do you think that character is in the movie at all?
I think it was an example of just showing. I do think that's kind of more of a class. Remember, he also thinks this is the most classic film he's done, as in because a lot of his films are just very weird and surreal and experimental. But this is kind of, it does have like beat by beat. It is a weird film, but I don't think you can say the form itself is weird. It's kind of a formal film.
Yeah.
And I think that was a way of just showing what this therapist specializes in, which is kind of this intense, in a way, method acting, method acting form of therapy where the therapist is taking on all of these different hats.
Yeah.
And Nola was considered his prized jewel because of the womb, the monstrous womb.
Do you think, so here's a question I hadn't thought of until just literally right now. What was the origin of this womb? Did the therapist, was she like chosen? I mean, I guess I just don't know at all. Like, she didn't develop the womb in therapy, but she was just some oddity or, I guess the film doesn't even really try to go there or need to go there.
Well, the film, the therapist kind of, it says that it was a byproduct of the psychoplasmic sessions, and that
rage
about her abuse, because she was abused as a child, was so strong that she
developed an external brood machine.
Exactly.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
A couple of things I had to write down this quote because this was awesome. She says, "This is Nola."
Yeah.
She says something. Okay, this is gonna be a. Subject to my bad handwriting here.
Sure.
Sometimes they're bad mamas. They're fucked up mamas. That's just great.
No, honestly, I think that this film is such a fun watch.
Yeah,
just fun on watch. A on a surface level. I think it's only when you start to break it down that you're like, wow, David Cronenberg, you have some woman issues.
Yes.
But I do think it's a fun watch. Like, yeah. Like I don't think it's boring. I do think it moves along. And like, it's just absurd. It's an absurd film. I do think
absurd film. And a very much brood. That was one of the archetypes. Brood mother. Brood.
Monstrous womb.
Monstrous womb.
It's
the brood.
Yeah. And I mean, it was such a perfect example that's the one. If you, this book is available at most libraries.
What's the name of it? Do you know?
Monstrous Feminine.
Monstrous Feminine. All right.
Yeah. Monstrous Feminine by Barbara Creed. She does the entire chapter on the brood. But wow. She really breaks it down. And when she breaks it, you're just like, wow.
Wow.
Wow. He really just, you know, the objection is her.
Uh-huh.
It's completely her. She's the problem.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until she's dead that he was able to save his daughter. It's so literal. He had to kill her for all the bad stuff to happen for him to keep his daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeesh. what do you, is there like a, I felt like there's a little bit of a, I don't know what to think about the therapy angle. Like, is, I imagine there was some pretty wild stuff happening with therapy and cults and stuff at that time. So the therapy business.
I don't know if it's really a critique of it.
Nah. Just yeah, more of using I think it to get to a
maybe if, story. If you really want to look at it, you could even think that perhaps they were going to therapy during the divorce proceedings, and maybe that's why the therapist is kind of codified as
yeah.
But
Cronenberg was like, I know exactly how to write this.
Yes,
yeah,
that would be again a bit week. Of a stretch. Yeah,
okay.
And I mean, to be fair, it's also just something that we don't really know because David Cronenberg is. I mean, no director really wants to explain their films that much. Even Kubrick is like, I shouldn't have to explain what the film is.
Yeah.
What you want it to
it's
be.
It's like, is it like telling, like explaining a joke kind of thing? It's like, it kind of ruins
yeah,
it.
Yeah, directors just don't like explaining their work. And I think it's already revealing enough that he has discussed the source. And mm-hmm. like, they were literally, when this was in production, they were literally going through the custody battle.
Gotcha.
So it's written as codified and true to life, I think, as it felt. Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Are you ready to do Under the Skin?
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Let's do that. A bit of Under the Skin, which is a 2013 film by Jonathan Glazer. He did Birth and Sexy Beast. He currently has
those are two different movies, Birth and Sexy Beast. Okay.
Yeah. Birth is pretty crazy. It's Nicole Kidman, and it's about a woman whose husband is reincarnated in a six-year-old boy.
Oh, that sounds bad.
It's one of the craziest films I've ever seen.
Really?
Jonathan Glazer is actually one of my favorite directors.
Is he French?
No, he is English.
Okay.
Yeah, English. And this is actually probably my second favorite film of all time, Under the Skin.
Whoa!
Yeah, I actually oscillate between Donnie Darko and Under the Skin.
Wow.
This is definitely my favorite film of the 21st century. I think it's an absolute masterpiece.
Wow.
And it's funny, I never actually thought of Monstrous Feminine until we were going to do this episode, and I was like, oh my god. Under the Skin works.
What archetype do you think it works under?
It's very interesting because the interesting thing, well, let's first talk about what the film is about. Actually, I want to know.
Uh-huh.
What do you think the film was about?
Wow. Well, I'll go, can we go through the plot first and then get there?
Literally, I'm really intrigued to know
okay.
what you think in well, general. So what
okay,
what
do you so here of? Goes the plot as remembered by me. So Scarlett Johansson is in Ireland. Everybody's
Scotland.
There we go. Already off to a good start. So she is basically picking up dudes in a truck, and then femme fatale destroying them in some way, kind of burying them under this liquid in this very symbolic, beautiful scenes of seduction, and there's amazing. And she's going, and there's this other male character, both at the very beginning.
The motorcyclist. Yeah.
The motorcyclist at the beginning, who is only there for a quick second. So it actually had me thinking, doubting that he was even a different person. And actually, okay, at the very beginning, the motorcyclist picks up, this is a man, gets off the motorcycle, we think he's a man, gets off the motorcycle, picks up a body off the side of the road who's like a, looks like a woman who's been murdered, and puts her in the truck, and Scarlett Johansson is naked in the truck, and she takes the woman's clothing and puts it on. That's actually the very beginning of the movie. Then she picks up people and we think murders them, destroys them somehow, buries them under this weird dark liquid. And then at some point she kind of has some character development where she second guesses herself or starts to have some sort of change of heart, enlightenment, and then the movie goes off in that direction.
Okay. That is really fascinating, because this film is a film that I think if you don't know the context of the plot, it could almost be about anything, and that's kind of done on purpose. So what Under the Skin is actually about is Scarlett Johansson plays a prostitute alien that comes to Earth.
It's even better if you just say it like that. Yeah.
I mean, it's true.
Yeah.
That comes to Earth to harvest men for her home planet. Okay. And in the midst of her harvesting, she starts to feel second doubts, and we can discuss why she does. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, she's exterminated. Yeah. Okay, so did you ever get the alien side of it?
Yeah. Now, I hadn't thought so clearly and so straightforwardly. It seemed so a little open-endedy, so I hadn't actually pinned down that, yes, she was an alien, yes, she was harvesting.
The way that that's only explained, because uh-huh. This film, hardly anything, there's only 13 lines of dialogue in the whole film.
Are you kidding me?
Nope. Yeah,
no 13 way. Lines whoa, of dialogue whoa, whoa, in the whoa, whole whoa, 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 that can't be true.
I think that's not counting the men. I think that's okay. counting her. And she, okay. really, she's the only one that speaks in the film. Aside from the men?
Yeah.
The motorcyclist doesn't
speak. So maybe
13
lines that she says?
Yeah.
Okay. Whew, man, damn.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
No, and it's a two-hour film. It, the film is really a silent film, if you kind of think about
and
it.
And not a lot of... I love that they don't use music until nope. they need... When they do, it's so powerful.
I actually have the score on vinyl.
Really?
Yeah, that's wow. I told you it's my
but
favorite.
But she's not
song.
A hipster, ladies and gentlemen.
I love vinyl. I do collect vinyl. That is my thing.
Yeah.
And so it's about the harvests. And so the only dead giveaway of the space thing is actually the very, very, very beginning. You actually recall the first scene wrongly. The first scene is a shot of space, Earth being eclipsed by another planet, and then you see the formation of an eye and a body in a wide,
oh
white
my
open space.
God.
That is the only explanation that you have.
I should have gone back
made.
And watched that she's being made in that moment.
Yeah, so the creation, yeah,
wow,
that's why she shows up. And then right after that, the motorcyclist is kind of her handler,
uh-huh.
in a way. And that is when the motorcyclist then comes in. Scarlett Johansson's body is made. They got this random woman. They took off all her clothes.
Yeah.
And then that's when Scarlett Johansson.
You know, that's
hunting.
Funny, because in the first couple 2 minutes, I wrote down in my notes, I was like, well, I've gotten to the 2 minute mark and I already need to read the Wikipedia. Like whatever was happening there that you just described in that first 2 minutes, it was so abstract in the moment I was like, my brain was like, don't know what to do with that. So let's just put that aside.
That's why I really like this one. Wow. It's something I can rewatch it so many times and you get so much. Yeah. I saw it with Delia and Delia actually read the novel. There's a novel with a lot that happens. Huh. A lot that happens. This film was actually supposed to be a multi-million dollar film. It was supposed to be a big thing where Jonathan was going to do the whole thing full throttle. But then when he was, it was in development for over a decade.
Whoa.
When he was working it out, he says that the way to describe it is it started off like the production of a Queen concert going all the way to a PJ Harvey concert. And you can totally... I mean, it's such a bare film. It is so, and the way that it was created, it's mostly non-actors. So Scarlett Johansson's really the only person that you know. Scarlett Johansson even wasn't the first choice. He wanted someone even more unknown. But the studio was like, listen, the only way that you're going to make this film is if you get a bankable.
They're like, please.
Yeah. So they chose Scarlett, who was just starting out in her Marvel career then. She made it in between Marvel films.
And at the time this came out, there was another Scarlett Johansson movie out that was also Lucy.
Yeah.
Was that the one where she's the AI?
Yes.
Okay. It came out at a time where I was like,
wait, are you talking about her or Lucy?
Oh, no, I was talking about her, but Lucy is the right one. Which one is Lucy?
That's the Luc Besson one, the one where she is like the smartest person in the world. Right? Okay. Where like her brain, it says that, I think the tagline, I remember the tagline being something ridiculous like, the human brain takes 5 minutes to process 100 things. It takes her brain only one.
Oh, so, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, gotta watch a movie about that. So they both came out at the same time, and I remember being kind of confused as the consumer.
That's the kind of only sad part about this film. I hate Scarlett Johansson. We both, I don't know anyone that knows Scarlett Johansson, but I will defend her to death in this film because I think her performance is so transcendent. And I honestly, I don't think it's really at cause of her. I think she just worked with a genius director.
I think it's a good role for her because I actually also don't like her acting that much. But I think this, as an alien, it's kind of like the Keanu Reeves playing the Matrix thing. Like, she brought the right
Jonathan Glazer said the same thing. He was like, she's so beautiful and so like she doesn't look of this world, you know.
Yeah,
but it
that's
kind of
true.
Made sense that she was the archetype of like this perfect alien woman that was going to seduce.
And her Irish accent was probably
Scottish.
Not
and actually,
I did
really
that on purpose that time, but yes,
it really wasn't that bad. No,
it wasn't that
honestly
bad.
And because now when you pitch Under the Skin, they're like, oh, the Scarlett Johansson movie, and I'm like, it's not, you know, I know what you mean by that, but it's not even her movie. This is a Jonathan Glazer film. Yeah. And so on that note, mostly non-actors, so every single time that she picked someone up, there were hidden cameras all over the car. There are even hidden cameras in the house. And so she would pick the guys up, they would go through the thing, and at the end of the ride, they would be told, hey, listen, these are the ramifications of what's going to happen. Are you okay with it happening?
This? Are you telling me that they just randomly picked up people off the side of the road?
Yes.
For this movie?
Yes.
No way.
Yes, they did.
So that was real.
The car rides, yeah. The only
the
one
car
that,
rides were
that
real?
Were not, yeah, the only car rides that were not random was the Elephant Man.
Uh-huh.
And then once they were in the house, then they were told, this is a film. This is what's going
no
to happen.
No way. They actually thought that Scarlett Johansson like picked them up and was going
she
to
wasn't
have sex
recognized
with
that
them
often. Yeah.
In the house.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's phenomenal.
No, everything about this film, I think, is extraordinarily
holy
beautiful.
Mackerel.
And just fascinating, you know, just that in and of itself. And so. Yeah, so there's a lot more with the monstrous feminine going on in this because if we want to get technical about it, it's not a gendered monster, technically. She has to, if we're going to use she here, she has to learn how to perform femininity in order to get these men, in order to get what she wants.
Yeah.
And then the interesting part is what happens once they're in the house with her?
Then they do this cool dance seduction sequence that is just, I can't describe it. It's beautiful.
do they ever have sex?
No.
No. And whenever, you know, when we see Scarlett Johansson completely naked, how did that make you feel?
I was like, to be honest.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I was like, wow. And that was probably the only thing that it, you know.
Okay, to me,
that's the only thing in my brain is going on.
I never felt sexual. See, and it's crazy because I think objectively Scarlett Johansson is one of the most beautiful men on earth. But the way that it's done, it really is just, she is really just a vessel. You really do notice. I think the first time you might be like, oh, okay. But then when it happens over and over, you really just realize it's a vessel. So she never even uses her femininity in the performative way that we expect. Mm-hmm. Like, you usually expect, okay, now they're gonna, and this happens often with female monsters in The Monstrous Feminine. Specifically, you can think of Jennifer's Body. Did you ever see Jennifer's Body?
Yeah, it's been so long. Is that Megan Fox?
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, remember, she would sleep with the guys and then she would attack them. That's kind of the typical monstrous feminine role.
Yeah.
But it's not that way in Under the Skin. It's used superficially, but then she doesn't exercise her sexuality completely that way. Hmm. She was a prostitute alien on her home planet. Okay. I think she recognized a lot of the solitude of, she was essentially sent to Earth as a punishment.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I think that is where the sympathy comes in. But even without that context, I think it's also just a matter of, it's a monster realizing, oh, wait, this race is not, like, these men are not all made the same.
Hmm.
She felt a lot of sympathy for the deformed man.
Yeah.
And then that's when things start to change and she tries to fill in that feminine role, but then the motorcyclist starts to go after her, and then she also realizes certain things. She tries to have sex for pleasure,
mm-hmm.
and then what does she realize?
She don't like it, or she didn't want it.
She's not feeling anything in her vagina. That's what happens when she looks over and she's inspecting her vagina.
Oh, she inspects it? Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. She's realizing, oh, nothing is happening. So then she just tries to go on the run from the motorcyclist. And then what is her ending?
Well, then there's this like total asshole character who's another regular guy looking dude.
A lumberjack.
Yeah. A lumberjack. And he at first helps her, and you have that tension where you don't know if he's going to be a good guy or bad guy, and he's a good guy at first, and he helps her out with something. And then 10 minutes later, he's like trying to rape her and hunt her down and kill her.
Yeah, so he tries to rape her, mm-hmm. but she's like struggling, and as she struggles, her skin starts to come off.
Mm-hmm.
And when he realizes that this thing that he tried to rape
mm-hmm.
is like bleeding black.
Uh-huh.
So what then, I think this is my favorite segment, as sad as it is, it's just done visually so well. She starts to peel off her skin and we see her real form, which is this completely black, it's hard to describe. It's like a black mannequin in a way.
Yeah.
Inky black. Yeah. Like, she even looks like space.
Like an iRobot-y kind of.
iRobot is actually really, but not so cheesy. It looks really good.
Yeah.
It looks really good. And then the alien collapses in the field.
Uh-huh.
And what the alien is not realizing is, yeah, the guy comes back to throw lighter fluid on her and set her on fire.
Yeah.
And so it almost, in a way, completely trajectories a whole feminine experience.
Okay, can you break that down?
Yes, she assumes the feminine identity.
Mm-hmm.
She does the bidding as told, but then she starts to gain empathy for the human race. She tries to perform.
And even herself.
Yeah. She tries to perform to expectation. She's realizing, oh, this sexual thing isn't working for me. Then when she tries to kind of assimilate, she gets attacked essentially for being a woman. That's what the rape is.
Uh-huh.
And the fact that she wasn't able to perform to that, aka the fact that she was unveiled, also was her undoing. It's a femicide kind of thing. And so it's very, her gender was a downfall. If perhaps she was a man, maybe she wouldn't have been raped.
Like they could have just harvested away.
And it even does this thing where like, Jonathan Glazer says that he didn't mean to make this as a gender experience film. He meant to make it as a human experience film.
Mm-hmm.
And I like him a lot. I think that's a bit of a hindsight of him because I think he accidentally made a very feminist film.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should look at it again and realize that this film makes so many strong statements about being a woman and what that means and how sexuality is used against and for women in very specific ways. And I think if we're to kind of put it in a category, archaic mother, monstrous womb, vampire, possessed monster, witch, castrating mother, and femme castratrice, I would probably put it as a femme castratrice. She doesn't literally castrate the men, but she is kind of a man eater.
Yeah.
And so I think and that's where it gets even more complex, because again, her gender is performative here.
Mm-hmm.
She's not necessarily a woman, but we only know her in the context of a woman and what that means.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
It's such a dense film and it is so good. And it's a twist on the virgin horror complex.
There was also the virgin horror complex. Okay. There was also a scene where she tries to eat cake, like after she's like gonna had her revelation, and she's maybe that's when she's going after pleasure, I guess, and she can't eat it; she has to spit it back out.
Yeah, she's realizing, and I guess that in and of itself, that's where you can kind of see Jonathan's human versus woman experience. Uh-huh. I think he meant to humanize her, literally try to make her have human experiences. So the eating the cake, having sex,
okay,
neither worked.
And then there's a scene where on a beach where one guy, she's like kind of flirting with this one guy trying to pick him up, and then he has to save, there's like a drowning thing going on with a kid drowning and a parent drowning and maybe a dog drowning.
Yeah, the dog dies.
However that was filmed,
yeah,
I was like, did they kill a child to film this? Like, because it looks, I can't even put, I tried to think about it for a couple seconds afterwards. I couldn't even figure out where you hide the people to save the people, because you can't fake the ocean. And so these people are out in the ocean.
Yeah.
And they had me hook, line, and sinker.
I don't think I have this on DVD, but I would love to see behind the scenes on this.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people focus on the car aspect, and I think, agreed, that's brilliant.
That's crazy. I can't believe it.
No, yeah, a lot of people have focused a lot on that, because they're like, the performances are insane, and that was all real.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's just so much, even just the ending with Scarlett being peeled away, uh-huh, and then I would love, because it still looks great. It doesn't look,
that's right, it's not cheesy. It doesn't look old.
It doesn't look really, it doesn't look computer generated,
no,
or anything. It just looks exactly what it is.
And one other thing I wanted to mention, do you have anything else at the end of
no
that? One other thing I wanted to mention is the establishing shots,
yeah,
were so different. And if everybody did it like this, I would absolutely hate it, because not a lot of people do this. I thought it was awesome. And that is that usually an establishing shot of like a crowd or a couple people, just to establish that there's people in the scene or where they are. This would do like establishing shot, establishing shot, establishing shot. You would see like all these different people. And it just made it feel so real.
Yeah.
It almost felt like backwards in a way. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. And
yeah,
it happens over and over again.
Like, especially I think what I'm thinking of is the party scene where you're not even sure where you're identifying with first. No, it's a film that meanders, but it's interesting. I think it's still very focused.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, as I said, even that opening scene, as you said, where you're like, I don't really understand where this fits in. Now, when you look back, you're like, oh, this is actually explaining something.
Yeah.
Even the things, I think that if you don't know the context of the motorcyclist, you're also kind of like, what is this guy doing? Like, he's just like, we're just watching.
It's almost like a pimp situation.
Yes, quite literally.
Yeah.
Exactly, quite literally. And I think that's very important. One, I think that's one of the themes of the novel, but it's also, I think, something that is underscored to show visually in the film. We never, ever, ever, ever hear a word from the motorcyclist.
Yeah, it's
the
better
most
that way.
Menacing. Yeah, he's one of the most menacing figures in the film.
And I like that he doesn't catch up to her, that the ending is, it feels
instead
realer.
Instead, something, yeah. Yeah, it's a depressing ending, but I think it's just I think we've talked a lot about this before, about when you're, I think we talked about it actually last time with Red State, when you're like, you're trying to critique something, but you end up doing the exact thing
that
you're
critique.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think Jonathan Glazer really was able to find the nuance in this. He was able to be like, you know, I never at one point felt like this film was misogynistic in a way. Yeah. If anything, I felt like it was trying to open up those dialogues. Mm-hmm. Because again, she's used as an object of as symbolically. She's not really fetishized in the way that we would expect, aka having these sex scenes and things like that. I think it's a really interesting dynamic. And yeah. I think aside from it just being made extraordinarily well, I mean, it's still highly influential. No one ever talks about it, but Stranger Things completely ripped off its aesthetic.
Oh, really?
Every single time that Eleven goes in the Upside Down.
Uh-huh. It looks like that. It has that same look to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's directly referencing that. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. Did not know that.
It's a highly influential film.
Demogorgon.
Right. Yeah. And yeah. So
the Demogorgon was all black too, I think.
Yeah.
Melty.
I mean, Stranger Things rips off a lot of different things, and I think that's part of its magic. But especially specifically when I'm talking about the Upside Down, right now I'm rewatching it, so maybe that's why it's fresh in my mind.
Uh-huh.
It's when she's trying to go between worlds. It's that same exact black room, water floor.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I did forget about that.
Yeah. I mean, it's not ambiguous. It's almost shot for shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. When we go to the next one, I'll show you. Yeah. And so it's so good. It's so good. I love him. And
Jonathan, give us a call.
The only film of Scarlett Johansson's that I like.
So. All right. Scarlett, give us a call. We'll have
Don't
you
give us a call.
No, give us a call.
I do not respect you.
No, I will, but we respect you for this movie. This movie
I don't respect
slam
her for this
dunk.
Movie either.
No, we respect her for this
I
movie.
I just love this movie. All right. Okay. You ready for Raw?
Yeah, let's get it.
Okay, and that was a bit of Raw done by Julia Ducournau. And that is a French film from 2016. A lady director. We don't get a lot of lady directors. Mm-hmm. It was kind of her breakthrough hit. And it's about this girl who's a vegetarian that goes to the school, right?
Yeah.
And
then we find out it's a veterinarian school.
A veterinarian school. But she has to eat like a rabbit.
There's a lot of peer pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's like it's almost like a fraternity, it seems like.
Yeah. There's like this weird initiation, right? Where they're drenched in blood. It's a cool looking scene.
The whole school is overrun by these delinquent French children who are just awful to each other.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of patriarchal dudes.
Yeah.
And a lot of weird kind of implications.
Yes, this movie is big. I actually thought this was every scene in this movie gives me anxiety in different ways.
Yeah, and I actually agree with
and
that.
I actually started to make a list.
Oh, did you?
I'm gonna go through it real quick. Is that
please
okay?
Go. Yeah,
number one, peer pressure. I hate peer pressure. That makes me anxious. Yes. Two, rude older siblings.
Yes, her Justine, her
rude older sibling.
Yeah.
Three, bad roommate etiquette. She walks in on the roommate and he's like having sex. Or
right,
something, you know,
right.
You know, right there, right in front of the door. Involuntarily stealing something, like just having to steal something. Getting caught stealing something. Unwanted physical contact. That happens. That happens in a lot of movies. But and then nervously chewing hair.
Oh, yeah. She does. Oh, that's
and
gross.
Then the next scene was so gross, I had to stop my list.
Oh, was that the bikini scene?
No, that scene was so gross too. No,
a lot of scene, gross things happen.
I don't even want to describe
this. Is one of the grossest films in general.
Yeah,
and it's a little surprising in a way, but I guess let's just. So first off, this film is essentially about cannibals. It's a cannibal film.
Cannibals.
Right.
Okay.
And Juliette de Courtenay does not consider it a horror film. She considers it a coming of age film, and she wanted us to sympathize with the cannibal because she says that they're always othered as them.
The monsters,
and
the others.
She wanted the cannibals to be codified as us and me.
Okay.
And, you know, I think I don't like this film, just straight up. I don't like this film, but I think it's a really good study in a subversion of expectations. I think something that Clinton and I say a lot is just, you know, French films are gonna French. You know, they're just kind of ridiculous.
I know that now.
And over the top.
They're gonna make me feel and see things that I just
And I mean, that's because French cinema in general it's kind of considered the crown jewel of cinema in general. I mean, Hollywood is considered the Hollywood.
Yeah.
But French cinema has always been considered the refined. Like,
okay.
Like cinematics are so intrinsic to their mainstream culture in a way that's not to us.
Yeah.
So
you do gore? You think gore is scary? Well, have you considered throwing up hair? Yeah, that's even scarier.
Yeah, but I mean, in a way, actually, I know that you're kind of making a joke, but that's literally kind of some of their discussions. It's kind of like, well, why do you find it disgusting, you know?
Yeah.
And things like that.
It's true.
And
truly.
And I mean,
horrifying.
that's always something that filmmakers like Gaspar Noé and Juliette de Courtenay, this is only her second film, so she's kind of establishing herself. But Beltran, the guy that did The Wild Boys, also kind of came from who is really the bad guy here? Is it you? And so that's very ambiguous to their culture. Mm-hmm. It's something that both you and I don't really agree with, but it's an interesting thing to study, especially when you look at it through the monstrous feminine. Who is the monstrous feminine here, you know?
Well, clearly the girl that eats people.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. Yeah, but she's our protagonist. She's the one that's going over literally a spot in puberty by learning how to eat people.
Yeah.
And we even learn at the end that it is a strain that comes through the women in their family.
Mm-hmm.
So it's even codified as a feminine kind of thing. It's just kind of like, well, do we see it as a monster thing? I think if we're speaking for purposes of this class or purposes of this episode, I think it's kind of a mix of the femme castratrice. I think it would probably be the femme castratrice.
Yeah.
But
another one.
But to be fair, it's not, her victims aren't focused in gender either. She eats her sister's finger.
Yeah.
So, and even Barbara Creed, when she was analyzing this film, she thought it was more difficult to analyze because, as Julia said, this is not a horror film. This is a coming of age film. So the threats, the stakes are different. And I actually kind of agree. I do think that the stakes are different in this film because it's approached as a humanizing attempt of cannibalism, or humanizing attempt of our protagonist, which is the cannibal.
So
it's just a lot to unpack.
Did she, I mean, but she didn't just make a movie to be like, hey, cannibals, they're probably like, what if cannibals are all right?
I think that's actually literally her intention for making this film. I mean, that's the thing. It's hard to say because every single time that I've read an interview with her, she's one of those that's like, it's not a feminist film, it's a coming of age film. And
why can't it be both? I guess.
Yeah. I
mean, because coming of age as a woman is a particular thing.
She doesn't view it as feminist.
Is that a French thing?
I think,
is that a French like resistance to feminism?
I think it could be. I think I view it a lot in, not a lot in American or British directors, I will say. I do think, but it's not unheard. I mean, remember Lilia Mirpour? She's Iranian. She was raised in Miami.
Yeah.
She also balks against the feminist thing. I think a lot of female directors are, they are worried about being pigeonholed.
Yeah, I could see that.
And
then all of a sudden, producers don't want to, you know, might shut you out. And people think your audience is more limited.
But I do think it's also kind of a central, like, and this is just me speaking, like, I would not balk against it. I would instead be like, well, yes, it is, but it's also all of these other things. Whereas I think people, ladies specifically, like Lily and Julia, they identify so much with things that are kind of codified as male and masculine, especially in their influences, that I think that's probably why they don't view their works as feminist, even though they kind of do seem very feminist.
Yeah.
I do think the messaging in this film is odd.
I
actually wouldn't know if I would call it a feminist. I think the differentiation is that this film was really driven by the female gaze.
By the female gaze of being female, of the world?
The female gaze of the world, yeah, because, I mean, the female gaze as a spectator, right? Because it's done by a female director, so we already know that the camera is going to go in different places than it would if it was. That's what literally the female gaze means. And I do think that the treatment of Justine is done differently than, say, what Bertrand would do. But all that being said, I'm not sure if just because this film operates under the female gaze, if it's really a feminist film.
Yeah. I like this movie. I was excited to talk about this movie because I feel like there's so much of feminine like horror in here with like body dysmorphia, like the whole anorexia
and the whole part of the monstrous feminine is that female bodily fluids are abject. Menstruation is abject. So I agree with you. There's definitely abjection, female abjection here.
So I actually think it's most interesting in the in that gender kind of breaking it down in society and what society expects and demands and people's all the horrors of, you know, just humanity, really.
Yeah, and kind of, it does kind of tackle the sexist myths of motherhood at that too. I do think the more feminist slant is even looking at the power plate, like who's in power in the household, and it would be the women because the women are the man eaters essentially.
Although the people in power in the school were really the men.
The men, right? Yeah. But they're kind of eating them, right? They eat her best friend. Her sister eats her best friend. There is also like a really strong incestuous vibe in this film.
With the sisters, you mean?
Yeah.
That's interesting you say that, because I read it as just a cultural difference, and I thought, oh, that's interesting that they could be so close, and like, oh, that's nice.
You know who I got the incestuous thing from? I got it from Barbara herself. She actually said that there's a really interesting queering of the sisters, and when she said it that way, I was like, actually kind of, because it's almost like a ritual incest. Like, they share something so abject together that it's almost...
It bonds like, them?
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. And she eats her.
Literally.
So there is that kind of like interesting queer reading that you can kind of even take into it.
Yeah.
So that's why I actually think, even though I don't think I'll ever watch this film again.
Yeah.
I do think that it has many layers to look at.
Many layers to look at. Lots to talk about. I am glad I watched it, even though I don't think I enjoyed a single moment of it. It was so anxiety producing and horrifying, but I am glad to have watched it. And I feel like I wear it as a badge now. It's like, I've seen Raw, and it's not that gory, gross.
I disagree. I actually think it's really gross.
Well, gross. It's definitely really gross. But not in like the buckets of blood kind of way that you might expect from a horror movie.
It's not necessarily like creative gore. It's just the fact that eating people alive is just gross.
That's gross.
Yeah.
That's gross. And it's like they tried to cram in every single moment.
Every kind of creative way to eat people, yeah.
And they're like, oh, okay, so this takes place in a veterinarian school. Okay, so after we're done with this gross scene, then you're going to see the character, and the character's going to have their arm inside of a cow's butt. And then it's just like...
Yeah.
Why? Yeah. Because more.
Yeah, fluids is definitely codified as abject. And even when it is revealed that the mother eats the father,
Yeah.
It's like a scarred chest.
What did you think of that? Because I actually thought that was kind of a weak ending.
I think that plot-wise, this is a weak film, actually. Okay. I think it introduces a lot of interesting ideas, but if we want to talk about logical sense, it kind of falls into Us for me.
Okay.
Where Us is just like such logical fallacies to me. Mm-hmm. I think Raw falls underneath that too, because if that's the case, if he's like being eaten alive every day for the last like whatever many years.
Must just be once in a while or something, you know?
Right. How did that not, you know, it just raised a lot more questions. And presented a lot more logical fallacies that I'm not sure that they were.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
It kind of similar to The Brood. It was this like opening of the shirt. And I didn't really think it needed to happen. Out of all the things in the movie, it wasn't even the grossest. It wasn't even.
I think the only narrative purpose that it supported is the fact that this was a trait that ran through all of the women in their family.
Yeah.
So I think that's the purpose it served.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing that it does because of that is then we understand, okay, so this objection again is feminine. It's something that came from the mom. So actually you can even argue archaic mother for
okay,
that.
Okay. Yeah. Because
archaic mother is the mother that breeds, that keeps breeding the abjection, which is why Alien is perfect. Considered archaic mother, because an alien is all of these other aliens, right? That comes from mother. And so you can kind of make even the argument for that for Raw. But again, since it's literally like, this is after she visits her sister in jail. This is like one of the very, very, very last scenes that you're just kind of like, oh, okay, so you just opened another thread into this without following it through. I think that's how it feels.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Raw.
So I know you had questions. Did that answer your questions?
I think so. It's interesting what movies you think about afterwards and which ones you don't. And I think my hesitation to even think about this one afterwards is it's so gross that my brain doesn't even want to think about it. It's like,
right.
If I think about it, I'm kind of thinking about the shocking moments.
Right.
And not so much, oh, I wonder why this happened or this happened. So I did
it's
question
definitely
question
sensationalist.
That.
Yeah. And it's I saw this one when it came out 2016. And I hated it. But then when I got the class, it wasn't part of the class or anything, but I just thought, well, one, it's rare to see horror female directors. This is an example of one. And two, there is an attempt. I don't think it's successful, but I do think it's made in a really accessible way. And I do think I noticed younger kids like it.
Okay.
Lot. Yeah. Like my kids, they thought it was gross, but they liked it.
Interesting.
And I think it just opens up a lot of questions. And I think it's an interesting take on the monstrous feminine. We don't have a lot of examples of that done by female directors. Like one is Jennifer's Body that was done by Karen Kusama.
Oh, really?
And yeah.
Okay.
And that is one of very few. So Raw is kind of in and of itself in monstrous feminine done by the female gaze. And that's really why I wanted to discuss it, because I do think it has a different feel to the other two films. Even though I think every single one of these films is extraordinarily different. Like I think The Brood is really classic misogynist, you know, kind of drivel, even though I like it.
Yeah.
Under the Skin is really poetic, a kind of contemplation on the he says human experience, but I do think it's more specific to the monstrous feminine experience. And then we have Raw, which I really do think tries to attempt to just make kind of a John Hughes film if it was done through the eyes of a very confused French girl that didn't want to start eating people and then started eating people.
She's such a do-gooder too.
Yeah, she's actually cute. I think the actress is very cute. I think she did a very good job.
Well, it has been an absolute pleasure to experience so many different types of this monstrous feminine. And I really do want to come back to it at some point and get some more, because I know there are more.
There are a lot more like we can talk about. I really want to talk about Possession, because Possession is one of my favorite horror films. And it was done in 1981. And the way that The Brood shows his David Cronenberg's side of the divorce.
Uh-huh.
Possession was also done by Andrzej Żuławski. He was going through a divorce, but I think the ramifications are completely different.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
And so have that Blu-ray. You can go ahead and borrow it. But you know, there's always stuff coming out, and you can even look at things like Friday the 13th. You know, technically kind of a monstrous feminine film. At least the first one, right?
Okay.
Yeah, the first one was when the...
With Jason's mother kind of thing?
Yeah, when Jason's mother is the killer.
Okay.
Things like that. Scream 4, that's another one to look at.
Scream 4.
Yeah.
I kind of forget.
Scream 4 was when it was her cousin, Emma Roberts, killing
everyone. Oh my God.
I loved Scream 4. That was...
Really?
Yeah, I love all of the Scream movies.
Emma Roberts is just like...
Oh no, yeah, I hate her.
I like her as a person, but...
I don't like her as a person. She beats her boyfriend.
Oh, that's true. That's a little monstrous feminine IRL.
IRL, yeah. this is my favorite theory, the feminist film theory to teach, I think is super fascinating, and I like it a lot.
Well, thank you for teaching it, and thank you for letting me pal around with you.
Awesome. All right. So, any final thoughts?
No, I'm in it. I'm psyched. What are we talking about? Do we know what we're talking about next time?
We are either going to have a guest episode, or we might get into aliens or Canada or just, we don't know yet. But definitely in a couple of weeks, you'll hear from us soon. And, you know, we're going to go watch these films and do some things and email some embassies. And as always, subscribe and rate.
Like and subscribe.
Yes, like and subscribe.
We're always online.
You know what's funny? I actually just read a bit on U.S. Argentine films that are made in Argentina but are made to pass for the U.S. and they're in English and everything. And I'm like, this seems like something right up
Interesting.
Clinton's
Interesting. Interesting. So, are they like for a streaming service or something? Or
that's a joke, right?
They are.
No, they're not anywhere.
They're not anywhere.
No, yeah. So we're going to have to contact Argentina embassy to help us find these films. Okay. Well, it has been a pleasure speaking to you all. And we will see you soon.
Yes, from Horrorspiria, from our house to your house.
Adios.